Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, I guess I just have one question.
Go for it. Hit me with your questions.
Why is milking space whales something that Starfleet would do?
Because there's an episode...
Oh God, there's really an answer to this.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 17.11.14.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she has a third arm that she saves just for hugs. It's Ambassador Danae.
You think that's what it's for?
Wait, what else would it be for? Elaborate.
How are you, Captain?
I'm good. I just turned you back up because you were beatboxing as I did my intro and I couldn't concentrate, so I turned you down.
That was not beatboxing. That was just making noises.
That could have been anything. I turned you off.
Yeah. That's understandable.
I saw the lip movement and I was like, Looks like beatboxing. Also incredibly distracting. Audio technicalities aside, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing this week?
I'm doing very good. Feeling quite formal with my greetings, apparently.
I have so much that I could tell you about that we would not do a show.
That's fair. But most importantly, are there any updates with your Star Trek friends?
No.
Good. We don't do small talk. Small talk has been outlawed on this Enterprise. Let's get straight into it. This week's episode is called The Best Exotic Nanite Hotel. Did you do the homework and watch The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel?
Yes.
Your eyes just went wide, like I'd literally given you homework and you'd forgotten about it.
Yes,
I just got a glimpse into 14-year-old Danae. Oh, fuck.
Yes, I absolutely watched that movie.
Good. What was your favorite part of Tom Cruise's performance?
He's not in that movie.
God, nice. What was your favorite part of James Cameron's directing in that movie?
I don't know who directed it. I never know the directors.
That's fair.
But are you asking about like my favorite?
Don't you start Googling.
No, hands up here. Are you talking about my favorite scenes?
Yeah, what's your favorite scene from the movie? Actually, no. What scene do you think is going to be most relevant to this week's episode of Lower Decks?
Okay. Most relevant to this one will be the scene when someone elderly dies.
Hmm. Okay. Does that happen in the movie?
Did you not do the homework?
No, of course I didn't. Let's head over to the holodeck, because I don't think that movie's going to matter at all. And let's go see what nanites are doing in a hotel and exactly how exotic they are.
Yeah.
To beam out.
Yeah, beaming.
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what is your thing of choice from the replicator?
My thing of choice?
Yeah, your thing of choice.
Ooh. Can I have the sun that would allow me to not have the wrong amount of sun?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but you're going to have to wait for sins. I screamed internally when they said that. I have got so much to say about this sun. So much.
Yeah, and it's also like a big ask. Usually I go for the drinks, the beverages, or a weapon.
Yeah, you want me to replicate an entire artificial sun?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit too much.
It's a bit much. It's a bit much. What I would like as a D&D nerd is an icosahedron.
There you go. I like that part where she's like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. She just quickly counted.
So, oh my God, they were eaten by it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I count the hedron. So funny. There are so many good humor beats in this. But first, give us a synopsis.
Oh, okay. In this episode, did you want to know whatever happened to Mariner's girlfriend? This entire episode exists just for you. That is all I have to say about this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Overall thoughts and feelings, Ambassador.
It was an episode that I think told me that they knew that they had more time and then they didn't have more time.
Oh, wait, what do you mean by that? Like tying up
this
a loose
episode
end.
Might have been produced a long time ago and was like basically most of the way through production. And they're like, you know, we can use this one because it ties up the Mariner timeline, but I'm always going to be talking about what the writers are trying to do in this final season. And I think this one does two things. It wraps up a love story that I didn't even really know about, so I didn't care about it. And that's on me for not...
You knew about Jen and Mariner, though.
Not that they were a thing. Like, again, it's on me. I haven't watched all of the seasons, but that's not ever been something that I've been... If I've seen her, it's one episode, and I think it was the episode where they were doing the... were they doing some sort of... like a party in a room or something.
Yeah, and she starts phasering everybody and Jen joins her in the chaos of stunning everybody, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I remember her then and that's it. So I'd rather see Peanut Hamper. You know what I mean? I'd rather see some other epic character, but maybe in their original storyline as writers, they had more seasons that they were going to be able to kind of wrap up stories and such. And so this one was one that they had planned and, like I said, maybe even produced. We do get to see that Boimler is being brought in on leadership missions.
Yeah.
And so the transition for Boimler to become a commander is very evident because he's not on the B team adventure on this one. He's on the A team adventure on this one. So I think that they are progressing the overall story and development of the characters, but this one just felt like a put it on in the background, watch it. It just does stuff, you know, and there are a couple good laughs, but it did not capture my attention very strongly. I guess Talyn maybe has like a little bit of an interesting kind of moment where she has she has like an exchange with this rock and roll character.
Talyn on the vibe tubes. That was so good. That was so good.
So, but I don't know. I think it's hard. My expectations might be a bit too high. Like I'm watching this while also watching Agatha All Along as it releases.
Different beast.
Totally different styles of storytelling. Totally different lengths of time to tell the story. Totally different approaches. And coming off of watching the last two episodes of Agatha All Along in the last 24 hours to this, it literally feels like spritzing your face with water after like soaking in a hot tub. And so I think that I am going to be a little skewed on it. But when I really stop and think about it, there's a few beats in this that I really enjoyed. You have your friend adventure going on. You have a problem to solve. You have some funny beats that are inside of that. A couple epic standout moments like Talyn playing on those tubes from within the thing, or it's like that was a kind of looked really pretty. And I'm really, really glad that we don't have like the mom-daughter drama. But I think because it dipped into romance drama,
drama that we don't like. Yeah. I think I like this drama even less. I prefer the mama drama to relationship drama.
I did appreciate the kind of like the way that it was approached because they were so direct about it. Like, well, they weren't, but then they were. So I kind of appreciate that, but yeah, I checked out. What about you?
There's a few things that saved the episode for me. So the function of this episode for me is a fewfold. To wrap up the Jen girlfriend relationship situation thing being in the last season, so you get to tie that up in a nice little bow. Prod Boimler along a little bit more along his path to command, lay some foundations for the ongoing mystery this season, which is Starbase 80 and the different dimensional fissures that are popping up, and to tie all of that together, have some comedy. So there are like so many different strands in this episode that I was just like, I was jumping all over the place because some of them I was enjoying a lot. Some of them are packed into the last 60 seconds of the episode, but it opens up with something I could not be less interested in. And I'm just like, oh man, my eyes are just rolling so hard because it's like, oh, I thought we broke up, but we're actually together. I'm sure Chandler has had this storyline in Friends multiple times, like with Janice, I think. And I'm just like, I'm happy it went, it eventually gets to a place that I enjoyed, but it had such an uphill battle for me personally when it started off so hard with Jen thinking they're still together and Mariner like panicking. I was just getting all of like the 90s sitcom from it. What saves that storyline for me is Rutherford saying, well, Jen might not think this is weird because in Starfleet relationships take all sorts of shapes and sizes. So it's like being in the military is like the closest analogy I can think of. Partners can be separated for entire tours, like months or a year at a time. Children can be with one parent or the other. They can be shifted from military base to military base. They can live all over Europe, all over America. So Mariner's like incredulity that Jen thinks they're together, Rutherford steps in and just like, yeah, she might, because think of all of the different shapes and sizes. You have to have a relationship in Starfleet, and maybe not communicating about it is the best way you survive, because you can talk about the problem all day long, but unless you're both going to quit Starfleet and live together, stop communicating about the problem and just get on with what your relationship looks like. So that right in the middle of the episode, I was like, that's your angle. I'm on board with that. Okay, I can put up with the sitcominess of it because that's the part of Starfleet that you're trying to explain to me.
I did like that too. And I had that in my notes, the deeper look into what a relationship in Starfleet would be like, and the idea that lack of communication would be far more understandable than
just normal,
what we would expect. Yeah. But relationship drama is still something that just in general, I just check out a bit, because it's hard to care about something that the characters themselves don't care about. And the twist of this episode is that Jen didn't actually care. She just wanted to trap Mariner and make her feel uncomfortable. So, which didn't land for me. It ended up just being like I think it again was a moment that the show wanted to give these two characters together because it's coming to an end and they wanted to sort of land somewhere with the two of them. And so if I had been watching them a lot and liking them a lot, then I think I would have enjoyed this episode a bit more.
She doesn't pop up a huge amount during the previous season. It's not like she's in every episode. Like, she'll pop in every now and again to serve a function like this. So yeah, very much there. I think they had a destination in mind, and it was just how can we get them? How can we get them to it?
Yeah,
in 20 minutes.
Yes, and they also didn't go into Tendi Rutherford relationship. They were just back into it. Was just as if nothing had ever happened. They're just all back together, and you have Tendi like happily scanning. There's a moment when they checked Jen.
The Andorian?
Right? Yeah.
Oh, for brain parasite.
Parasite, yes. And Tendi had already scanned, and I loved that. You know, they're...
That's what she would do.
The clever thing about this show is they kind of subvert where you think it's going to go, and they just launch into the next thing quite quickly. But was there any surprises in this one for you? Because there were, like, we got to see aliens at this. So they go to this resort. They actually go to a moon-sized, like a pleasure cruise type of a thing.
A moon-sized space station resort hotel.
Yeah, hotel where each of these different sections does different things. And so you can have all kinds of experiences in one location, which I thought was kind of clever and fun to think about. And so because we go to this space station/resort together, there's lots of interesting creatures that we get to see. Are those recognizable aliens to you?
Mm. Yeah, this is really, really fun. Where I enjoy this episode the most is in its individual moments. And a lot of them happen on the Boimler B team adventure. So the first one, where I just like kind of bounced in my chair a little bit, is they get to like the recreation part, and the Gallimites are at a table, and Ransom is like, hey, go and talk to those Gallimites at that table and see what you can figure out. And they're just like chomping and be like, rah, 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 and they look really dangerous. And Gallimites didn't immediately twig with me, but their see-through skulls did, where you can see like their brain and stuff.
Yeah.
There's this running gag in Deep Space Nine where Jadzia is having a relationship with a Gallimite. Ensign, I can't remember his name, Ensign or Lieutenant something, but we never see him. But Kira judges her and is just like, is that the guy who you can see their brains? And I was just like, there's no way we're going to see this person in live action, because it's the 90s. Think about the prosthetic of like seeing a person, an alien's brain inside of their skull. It's probably going to be too gory for network TV. It's going to be a lot of work. So he was just always mentioned every now and again. Sometimes Jadzia would break up with him and then they'd get back together. So it was fun to see them animated and actually see a Gallimite, and just like, oh, it's a Gallimite. That's the alien that Jadzia was dating. So it's if you're going to pick an alien species, that's a really fun one to stick in there. And then the other aliens that he actually ends up talking to that are offended by eating. I had to Google this. They pop up in an episode of Enterprise that I cannot remember. I remember the look of the aliens, but it's probably an episode I've only seen once or twice.
The driving action of this episode is two parts, because as usual, they kind of have the A plot and the B plot. So the A plot is our B team, and they are supposed to find and capture this nano conglomerate that is racing around Glumpy.
Yeah.
Who's absorbing energy sources to, they believe, attempt to duplicate itself. And so they're running around and they supercharge it, and it gets pretty big and is causing chaos and wreaking havoc. And then the other one is that Boimler has been asked to go and retrieve an ambassador who has gone AWOL and rejects being told what to do and the dangers or the boredom of the day-to-day life of Starfleet, and has essentially been slowly accumulating others that feel the same way. And they've created a secret base in this mountain, which the chat pointed out is the Paramount Mountain.
Oh, I missed that. That's amazing.
Now that the chat said it, I can totally see that.
Oh, that's so funny.
But that was from Lloydie. The Easter egg was the Paramount Mountain. Which
that's amazing.
Now I can totally see it. But so they go, Admiral, thank you. And they all will like stay there, and they're protecting their right to chill. And the mission of the three is to be so chill that they're like almost absorbed into their group, but then also they want to take him back and capture him. So that's kind of that storyline. I mean, obviously, I liked the faster paced nanobite one, especially because as a twist at the end.
Love that twist.
What did you feel about the driving parts of this episode?
Yeah, so the Admiral one is a fun spin on the evil Admiral that has gone rogue and they have to be caught. Like, TNG did this a lot. It happens in basically every Star Trek movie as well. But I liked the spin that he's just like, I'm fed up of the mundane missions. Like, I've aspired throughout my entire career, and the fleet that they give me is milking space whales. And it's fun, because just like the Cerritos gets the shitty missions and like the less exciting stuff, there are hundreds of ships in Starfleet. They're not all going to be on the glamorous missions that the Enterprise is on. So there's going to be some admirals that end up perhaps with some of the more mundane missions, like just constantly milking space whales. So I don't blame him.
I have
him
so many
for
questions.
Go for it. Hit me with your questions.
Okay, I guess I just have one question.
It's fair, yeah.
Why is milking space whales something that Starfleet would do?
Because there's an episode.
Oh God, there's really an answer to this.
Yeah, no, there is. This is in my head logic. This is what it is. There is an episode where a space whale thing literally latches onto the Enterprise and sucks all of like the energy out of it. And they realize that this isn't like a freak anomaly. This is a living creature that thinks that Enterprise is its mummy and is nursing and is taking all of the energy out of the Enterprise. So the more they power up their shields, the more they do, the more it feeds the entity. So eventually they have to modulate the power output to be something it doesn't like. They literally sour the milk. And then the baby alien is like, and unlatches and disappears.
Okay.
The reason I think that they are preemptively milking these space creatures so that they don't spontaneously latch on to people. So I'm thinking, if you've got a shipping route, these space whales, babies, whatever, might naturally attract themselves to shipping routes where there's lots of milk and that this is a danger. So I imagine there is a fleet of ships patrolling shipping routes, preemptively milking the space whales so that they don't interfere with the shipping lanes. I would run Starfleet so well.
I mean, that sounds logical to me.
Yeah, don't you sin that. Don't you sin milking space whales, because I've got an answer.
No, I wouldn't sin it. I just didn't understand. So I come from the Southwest Missouri, where farms are very normal to see, and farm animals are normal to see. And I have memories of touring milk farms from a very early age. Like, our school outing was, we're going to go to the milk farm and show you guys how milk is made today. So you walk into a room, there's a bunch of cows in little pens, and then there's these udder suckers, and they're just down there milking the milk out. So when we're saying milking it, to me, it's like you're taking something out of the whale.
Mm.
But this is the other way to interpret that. And I like this so much better, because I was like, why are we stealing them?
Why
are we? Yeah, exactly.
I could be wrong as well. This is like out of canon. Like, they didn't explicitly say, but knowing Starfleet, I don't think they would be taking the milk from the whales. Like, that doesn't, that
this
feels,
is my confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't feel very Starfleet. It doesn't feel right. So as a, it should be like nursing whales is what they should have said. Yeah.
Yes.
But that's what
I don't know.
That's my instinct. That's the only reason. Because he mentions Galaxy's Child, which is the name of the episode where that happens. So that's why I mentally latched onto.
Oh God.
Onto that idea. Yeah.
No, I think it makes sense because, you know, but like on the farm, you don't go out and milk a baby goat. You feed a baby goat and then you milk of an adult goat.
Mm-hmm. But if cows were wandering around latching onto people because they were so hungry for milk, you'd have to do something about that. So you'd start feeding them so that they didn't attack the humans.
Yeah.
Actually, no, you'd probably just shoot them.
Which then means, no. You gotta wait for them to grow up and then you shoot them so you have their meat.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
So that's the confusing part for me, is just, I guess, the wording of it.
Yeah.
It's funnier to say milking space whales, though. So maybe that's just what it comes down to.
Although, I mean, nursing would have asked so many questions that then logically would have made more sense. Which is why I have such an issue with the fucking sun that they just invent. But we'll get to the sins later. We'll do that. Ambassador, did you, I don't even want to spend a lot of time on like the Jen thing, because whatever. No. Did you like the Boimler subplot with, he thinks he's going to be in trouble, but Ransom is doing him a solid in a fucked up way? How did that subplot hit you?
Well, and I also want to get to the twist of the other plot, because we really haven't talked too much about what the nanite situation was. So let's make sure we touch on that, because that's a big part.
That is, and that's all linked to the season-long arc as well, I think.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, mm-hmm. Are you excited about that?
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Okay. Because we'll talk about that next, right? Like,
we can do that next, yeah.
Okay.
No, we should spend the next half an hour talking about the nuances of Mariner's relationship with Jen and just how that made us feel.
I thought you were talking about space milk, and I was like, no,
no,
we
literally just did that. Yeah, we're already pushing on 10 minutes of that.
I think that it's a good thing to do with the storyline. To have a higher officer validate Boimler, I think, is important for a couple of reasons. One, he needs to have some outward accolade to propel him forward and give him the confidence to continue to grow his facial hair.
Right. If Boimler suddenly like gets to the end of the season and is like, oh, fuck, I'm Ransom. Like, suddenly realizes that he accidentally ransoms himself.
Did you see he had like a couple of more?
He's got a tiny little bit. I love that it's gradually progressing.
It's so sparse.
I love it.
And number two, I think that
So Boimler, the character himself, needs to hear it. But then number two, the audience needs to be told that this is a legitimate direction of the character, because we've seen him be a passionate, well-knowledged person, but he is so passionate and so wound tight that he has been a self-sabotaging individual, so concerned with how am I going to get to where I want to be, that he's not. It's such a great story arc. I continue to battle back and forth with who's the main character, but I think it's like this, the duality of Mariner and Boimler is just such a fucking great way to do a series, because it's not just singularly focused. You have two different ways of these people progressing through the ranks of the system.
Opposite ends of the same spectrum. It's really, yeah, really well thought out.
And we've seen Boimler succeed in so, so, so many ways. And we've seen him implode and mess things up so many times for both characters, both Mariner and Boimler. But it's really evident that they are going to be moving Boimler into this, like removing them from the group and kind of shifting him away. And I think we, the audience, yeah, needs to kind of hear that the writers are making an intentional effort to like validify. Is that a word?
It is now.
To make it actually foundationally make sense in a story fashion. And his arc is really fascinating to me, because a person like this works so hard to get to a goal, and then they get to that goal, hopefully someday. But Boimler wants to get there as fast as possible, but he's been held back almost from Mariner and the shenanigans, and also his own imploding. But like,
yeah, mainly himself.
So we get to see on something that a show kind of struggles with sometimes, with which is, as a viewer, we want to get to the juicy stuff too. You know, our 20-second shorts-minded brain, where we're wanting to see the content have its fruition at 20 seconds now, watching him arrive at the satisfactory point of being seen as an officer has taken this massive arc. And it makes sense. And I think it feels really, really good. So I like that they did that. I think it was important that they did that. I think it's important that it was real. Like, Handsome wasn't just saying it to say it. And the episode did this other interesting thing too, where both things were true. He was absolutely putting another person in danger, but also putting Boimler in a situation where he genuinely trusted that he was going to make good choices. Which he didn't. He made terrible choices many times because, again, he's in his own head and he's kind of his own saboteur. So if they can show us that his saboteur can finally be kind of put in chains, like he's had enough experience with the self-saboteur that he can put him in the back seat of the bus and say, you're not driving today, and really come into a maturity arc, that'd be awesome. I don't necessarily want to see him accidental his way into an officership. I really want to see Boimler's arc be that he genuinely earned it, and this made that feel real to me.
And I completely agree. I think that's the strongest bit of the episode for me, especially Ransom and how he acts. Like, Ransom, I mean, I could be reading way too much into this, but this was a really clever way for Ransom to be true to his character of the Ransom, yeah, that we know, who's a bit of a dick, a bit misguided and a bit Kirk and Riker and a little bit gung-ho, yes, but also show why he's a good first officer as well. Because a big part of Riker's arc is weird for TNG, but a big part of Riker's character is training and coaxing other crew members. So he does the crew evaluations for everybody. He helps decide promotions. He takes Wesley under his wing. That's what like a really good first officer does. And that's what Ransom is trying to do in his own, yeah, way. And even at the end, he admits, okay, that was maybe fucked up. But his, yeah, heart was, Boimler needs this as he steps up to be lieutenant and beyond.
But I didn't really think that his approach was cruel with Boimler. I thought it was maybe more cruel with the lava guy. But again, in his mind, lava guy who lost his hands and has them by the end of the episode, actually, like, he thinks he likes the danger.
Yeah, even with him, so, Ransom's like, oh, so, he loves this dangerous
stuff. He loves this stuff. Like, let's go get him. So he knows who to kind of pull in on different missions.
Well, and the clever thing, again, that the episode does is tie that back into communication. So,
yeah,
the fact that Ransom didn't communicate his methods results in that guy losing his hands, Boimler going into a panic attack and almost like abandoning them. So I think it's the communication element, again, like the A-plot with Mariner and Jem, where Ransom's like, I could have improved this if I'd communicated what I was doing better. Same goes for Boimler, if he communicated with Ransom.
Yes, yes. There's so much communication shit in almost every episode of this show, but I don't know that I agree, but I think what you're saying is, it's reminding me of the episode where Mariner and Handsome are going to fight that guy, and he stabs Mariner in the foot to keep him from, to keep her from going in there. And then so he just turns into this like double fist punch, like naked glory. He is really thoughtful and very dangerous, and he's very Mariner-esque in that way. And so he has been a really great example for someone like Mariner on, you can be chaotic and you can do crazy shit, but you got to know like when you're pulling the punches and when you're putting someone else in harm's way, because you know that you can kind of take over if you need to. And we see that sometimes with Mariner doing stuff too. So they're really playing around with the different kind of archetypes of who's in charge, but he's been a very consistent character. I really am fascinated by the idea that there's this, in my imagination, that there's this room of writers and they're writing a line for Ransom, and they're like, oh, that's not quite cocky enough. Oh, that's not quite, you know, this not enough. And they enough. Just, because there's not a lot from him, because this isn't his show, but in the lines, we learn a lot about the characters. And even though this episode didn't pace right for me because I wasn't as interested in the story that they were telling, it's still really well done.
Yeah, completely agree. I think the reason I end up liking it a little bit more is there were just some moments that, while the overall arc, mainly of the A-plot, doesn't do much for me, there are some moments that completely separately made me laugh out loud and gave me that that's really fucking cool chills moment as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's so conflicting in my brain to be so like meh about the A-plot and then have these moments where I'm like, this is an all-timer. I want to watch this again now for those moments.
Let's talk about those moments.
Let's do it.
One of them for me is the D20 rolling, which I don't know if it was actually a D20.
No, it is a D20. I Googled an icosahedron is a 20-sided polyhedron.
That's what I thought. Yeah. I mean, I know that die well.
Yes.
So I was pretty confident, but it was rolling. So, you know.
It's genius. It's just, it's a D&D thing.
It's
the whole
great
thing is a D&D adventure. It's so it's clever to pick a D20.
So it's rolling through the streets. It rolls past the Rock getting ice cream at an ice cream truck. It stops, rolls backwards, and then rolls over the truck to absorb the truck. And I thought,
so great.
That was, for me, one of the hot, funniest moments, but the funniest one is the one that I think you found hilarious, because the whole sequence was really interesting.
The whole
really
sequence
clever.
Just, so I'm going to call this Boimler scream edging. The comedic timing in this is so stinking good. It starts off with him skiing, and you get a Boimler scream, and you're just like, yay! I feel like it's the first proper Boimler scream of the season. And I'm like, cool, that's great. They've got to be careful with this, because if you keep doing the Boimler scream too much, then it's not going to be funny anymore. He gets a Boimler scream, he falls down, and then fucking launches himself off of the cliff, and then cut to the wide shot, and a literal pitch-perfect Boimler scream that is funny, stops being funny, gets funny again, stops being funny, gets funnier again, because it goes on for so long. Just the timing of that sequence is so, so good. And I just want to watch it over and over again. It was so fun.
I continue to be amazed by the voice actors.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Because they can animate something all day long, but the noises he makes are subtle.
Yes.
But then also very loud. Mm-hmm. But there's like a series of like little, just these little noises. I love it. That was definitely worth it.
I cannot remember what the episode is, but this is now neck and neck with my favorite Boimler scream moment. There's an episode.
I'm going to try to look it up.
There's an episode where he's in a transporter beam. It's not when he's stuck phasing, but he's getting beamed in or out of somewhere, and he's screaming, but the transporter beam keeps cutting him off. So instead of like a continuous scream, it gets cut off. So the scream stops and then restarts, stops and restarts as he's getting transported. And I think it's in season one, and it just made me laugh so much. Because like, what's going on? And he's just like screaming and like phasing in and out.
Yeah, there was definitely some beats that worked for me.
The other big moment that I really liked that gave me all of the chills, and it's just something Lower Decks does so well, it's pull out a geeky, nerdy reference that you would think wouldn't age well and make it stinking epic. And this is the Vibe Tubes.
Oh, I'm glad we're getting here, because I'm assuming that they've just been around somewhere inside the universe for a very long time.
I had to Google this. This is an episode.
Oh, you did?
This is an episode that I've watched many, many, many times. It's called We'll Always Have Paris. The reason I like this episode is that it's kind of a time travel adjacent episode where some time repetitiveness happens and there's a distortion that they have to investigate. But the Vibe Tubes come up during a holodeck program that Picard is running. He's at a cafe in Paris, and there's some guy playing the Vibe Tubes in the background. Never noticed them. I've never once noticed the Vibe Tubes. And they've just replicated them here. Talin loves them. And just the tone that they make is so good. I love using music and harmonic frequencies to solve a problem. It's the same thing with the comet episode in Strange New Worlds. I fucking love it. It gets me. And it's such a great set piece to end the episode with, of Talin doing like the vibing with it, and to have the really logical person bond with music that can both be logical and illogical. Chef's kiss. And I was like, man, I wish this was in an episode where I didn't hate the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, relationship drama really kills things.
Yeah,
it really kills the mood.
So even not knowing the Vibe Tubes, did you like that climax and how they got out of trouble?
I loved it. Yeah, it made sense. I think I kind of saw it coming a little bit, because there's, you know, an obvious build up to it. But I really enjoy Vulcan characters, as you know. And so anytime that a writer has to write lines for a Vulcan, I want to know how they would say something. It's kind of like that cartoon creator guy who writes the alien comic. And so he'll describe how an alien would order pizza. Like, he calls in and he says, yes, I would like to not create my own sustenance. I need you to bring yes. the sustenance to my door.
Yes.
Would you please put a variety of edible meat and vegetable onto a dough circle and make it hot and bring it to my door? I will exchange my money, you know, like,
yes.
Yeah, strange planet. Thank you, Link. That's it. So Vulcan speak reminds me of what it's like to put how we talk as friends, as professionals or whatever, through an extreme filter. And what comes out on the other side is this way of communicating that pauses my brain, and instead of thinking that I know what you're about to say, so I kind of check out a little bit, I'm really tuned into it. It's like listening to a professor at a college course, where you're dialed in to this unique way of sharing information. And I really, really like Vulcan speak.
It's similar to how Data talks. If Data, and this is a lot to do with Brent Spiner as well, if he's on screen, I'm fucking listening.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care what it is. I'm listening to the cadence, the words he chooses, what
yes.
he decides is important to communicate. I want to know what that character is in this moment.
And in this episode, Talin gets to kind of show her character. Not only is she sitting there in the midst of this chaos, just like calmly waiting for whatever to develop next. And then she's handed this thing. You can kind of see a little excitement that I feel like they animated into that moment when she's handed this device. And
yes.
So she plays it.
Well, it means a lot to her, because the rock guy is her favorite musician.
Yeah. And then she ends up talking with this rocky musician. I can't remember his name.
Grog? It's not Grog. Krog. Yeah, Krog.
Something like that.
K-R-O-G, I think.
And so there's that exchange. But then even further at the end, when she is given a signed autograph and how her mind says that for scientific research, she might just keep it in case she needs to study handwriting. And the decision to show us a little bit of when emotion pops out in this character, in this species, this, you know, that's an emotional response. She wanted to keep it, which is a really fun thing to see happen. Like, I don't think an android would emulate that desire to collect as part of running a program.
Data does. Data, but it is as part of an exercise in humanity.
Right. Exactly. Like, I'm going to do this because it's going to help me understand this. And there's a reason. This, with Talyn, it was more like watching what happens when something bubbles up to the surface that almost she didn't even expect to be possessive of this thing. And that kind of stuff really fascinates me. But this is not the show that explores those deep topics. This is the show that throws Boimler off of a cliff, you know? So it's appreciating the material, but knowing that I'm not going to be in it for very long.
And that's it. I think it does explore those, but it's usually in the last few minutes and it's so, so quick. So I love the efficiency of doing it, but that's, again, it's a reminder why this is not TNG. This is a different beast. This is a different type of show completely. TNG would spend way more time in that moment because it has more time and it's more serious.
Yeah. And I'm really into Vulcans.
Yeah, you are. I mean, why wouldn't you be? There are so many. We should just do a Vulcan season. I'm amazed that hasn't even come up yet. Just a season on Vulcans.
There's so many things we can do.
Yeah. So there's just one more thing I think we need to talk about, and that's the end of the episode and the fact that the Nanai, i.e. Cosahedron, is in fact being piloted by a teeny tiny Intrepid class starship that's been trapped inside there.
What does Intrepid class mean to you?
When you say the class of ship, that's what it looks like. So the Enterprise D is a galaxy class ship. The Cerritos is a
These are words. Can you describe it with shapes? Because that doesn't mean anything to me.
So the Enterprise D is the TNG Enterprise.
Picard's Enterprise. So we have like the disc on the front.
Yeah.
And then the nacelle whooshers in the back.
Well, no, because that's basically that's a lot of Starfleet ships.
Okay, but so we've got the flat disc.
They look exactly the same. So the Galaxy class ships, they all look the same. Voyager, Janeway's ship, is an Intrepid class ship. All of the Intrepid class look like Voyager. So if you had 10 of them together, they'd all essentially look the same.
I love that we're using my imagination when you literally have rows of ships behind you that you could use for more specific. I'm with you.
So they're Voyager-esque. The deep now, Derridex, they all look the same.
So the Intrepid class is that. So Galaxy class are the ones that go out and explore.
Yeah. So Galaxy class, I think, is a heavy cruiser, which means they explore, but they also have a ton of fucking weaponry for defense as well. But their main mission is exploration.
And having families aboard for some reason.
Yeah, right.
And then the Intrepid, mm-hmm. What's their purpose?
Intrepid was exploration. I think they were like deep space exploration, but no, they weren't deep space exploration.
Smaller?
They were mainly science vessels.
That's what I would remember. Yeah. I think it was a science vessel, exactly. But I don't remember.
Their 100%. Exclusive thing is to be a science vessel that explores things. They weren't meant for deep space.
Okay, and it's a smaller one.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's about half the size of the Enterprise D. Okay. Yeah,
Picard's that's Enterprise. All. That'll do for now. Let's get back to the show. So here comes the Intrepid class, and so immediately you're thinking about Janeway.
Immediately, yeah. So immediately I'm thinking Janeway. What did you think when you suddenly saw this tiny Voyager? What was going through your head? You're like, what's happening here?
I loved the shift because it went from a nanite. Thing just trying to duplicate itself tribble style that they were actually trying to gather energy to open up a rift to go back home.
To get home, yeah. Their dimension, everything is very, very small. They live in like a microscopic dimension. A rift has pulled them into a macroscopic dimension where everything is parallel but slightly different. So and so they're still in the TNG uniforms, they're still in the older uniforms, so uniform design hasn't quite evolved the same way. I love when she's like, oh hey, we have an admiral that's in our universe too, but all he does is
he's a whale milker.
Whales. He's just doomed throughout the multiverse to be milking space whales.
And there was a tie into the rift that had already appeared as well. So do you think that's... Okay.
So, yeah. Freeman says this is similar to a rift that we already experienced.
And at the beginning of that episode, they were talking about there's lots of rifts popping open lots around here. So something's open. Going on.
Something is happening where rifts are popping up throughout the cosmos and it's causing issues. So I thought this was
why you should watch Loki before you watch this series so that you can understand the multiverse.
Yes, I would. I would watch Loki. I would also watch All Good Things Come to an End. Which is the final episode of TNG. I'm just saying, like, time shenanigans and portals open up in the finale of TNG as well. So I'm saying my prediction that we're going to link back into the finales of other TNG era Star Trek is supported by the portal shenanigans and rifts giving you access to other points in time. I'm just saying.
So you're feeling more confident than ever about your prediction.
It has to be. And I really like, it doesn't have to be obviously, but I really like this way of doing it. There was a couple of seasons ago where we did cutscenes to the evil ship, cutscenes to other stuff that's happening. And it would be like the cold open to the episode. I love intertwining the ongoing arc into stuff that's relevant to the episode we're watching. So, and this is just seconds. You're on it for seconds. No one is scratching their head going, huh, this is like the thing we experienced in episode one when we got duplicated. Isn't that odd? It's just like kind of woven into the story. I really like that as an ongoing arc.
Yeah. I think that it was interesting whether it's tied into some greater thing or not. I liked that it made, they tied up that bow. Because sometimes I feel that the monster mystery is sort of at the end of Scooby-Doo. And you just rip off the mask, it's just time to go on, and you don't really think much about it. But this felt more valuable somehow. Yeah.
My headcanon is the captain of the Endeavor, this Intrepid class ship, kind of looked like the original actor that was going to play Janeway. But after the first day on set, she said, I cannot do this. I cannot wear this uniform. I cannot play with... They cast an entirely different person. She got to set and she said, I can't do this. I can't play with computers all day. I can't do the techno babble that you're asking me to say. And she just said, I'm sorry, guys. God. And like,
no, you're right. She does look like her.
Yeah. Respect to her for saying, I can't do this. I can't commit to this. So she leaves and Kate Mulgrew is brought in, who is the second choice. My headcanon is that in this universe, the Intrepid is the actor that plays this, the original Janeway.
Wow. Genevieve, maybe Buchholz?
Yes. Genevieve. That rings a bell. Yeah. So, and there's screen footage of her in the Starfleet uniform. They have a scene of her acting and she's just like, I'm sorry, guys. I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I've changed my mind.
After only 2 days of filming, realizing that the demands of an episodic television show are too much. Yeah, she departed. I mean, the chat is saying it too. And it's one of the thoughts I had, which is, you know, good on you. There's a reason that I have always tried to remember when I go in for a job interview, I'm just as validly interviewing them too, because you can take on something that you know is not good or you don't know how to do it and you say yes and it just ends up hurting everybody. So
good on her not doing it. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah, just it's incredible. So in my headcanon, this is her.
She looks very similar. Yeah. The animated character looks very similar. Yeah. Yeah.
So I like that in my brain. So I love that. I love the tie into the dimensional rifts. Not just because it supports my prediction, but because I love time rifts. I love dimensional rifts. Like before the MCU was doing multiverses, Star Trek was really doing multiverses really well and really subtly. And I think it's something that Star Trek has nailed. I think I'm going to say better than any other franchise I've come into contact with personally on screen. A couple of other references. Boimler is excited about a Dixon Hill slot machine that's on the hotel. Dixon Hill is a detective that Picard likes to play on the holodeck. So it's like a noir private eye during World War II, or like during the 50s after World War II, where he'll go and solve crimes as Dixon Hill. So it's a fun shout out.
I also liked that there was that sign after they had established the nanite situation. It was a couple beats later, a couple like scene changes later, and it was a wide shot of the building that they were in, and it had like the sign that was across that was "Pardon our nanites." I thought that was funny.
Oh, that's amazing.
Like you usually see "Pardon our mess" or "Pardon our progress."
Yeah,
our "Pardon our whatever." Yeah, "Pardon our construction." And it's like "Pardon our nanites."
That's how you would have to do it if you're actually running a place like that. Well, love it. Pips, before we head into some sinning ambassador.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with two. I kind of said that before we actually started recording, and my appreciation for the show and how they write it makes me want to make it higher.
Mm-hmm.
But my feeling leaving it was a two.
Yeah. I'm actually upgrading. This is going to make people really mad in the chat. I'm upgrading mine to three. Because I will send a message in the Discord. I'm upgrading mine to three because those individual moments that made me laugh, I cannot ignore that when we finish recording, I want to go back and watch those moments. And I get the function of the relationship drama. I get it. It is, like I said, it's saved by Rutherford explaining this is what Starfleet relationships might look like. So it does tie into what part of the Star Trek universe are we exploring here specifically. So I am gonna give it a three. I did have a good time despite the Jenner of it, or Marifa of it all.
I think it was Jeriner.
There's one final reference that I wanted to mention. The captain of the Endeavor says that they've just had a month of hell, which is a reference to an episode of Voyager called The Year of Hell. And that's one of the episodes I really want us to cover because it's fascinating. Just kind of shows how they were kind of parallel. With that, let's head over to engineering to do some sinning. Two to beam out.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is about sin, even our beloved Star Trek. I'm going to go first because I got to talk about this sun. The line is, you don't have to worry about sunscreen, because the sun makes sure that you get enough tanning. It won't over tan you. Ambassador, why doesn't that make any sense?
Because of reasons.
I'm going to tell you. How is it manually keeping track of the individual sunbeams that are hitting individuals? So once they've had the proper level of like skin bronzing, what, it cuts off the sunbeams from that person? It puts a hologram around them? How is it individually controlling the sunbeams that an individual person is experiencing? Wouldn't they be in darkness? How is it, like, I get it could do that on the whole, but I don't know how it's managing it for individual people who have individual needs and have been there for their own amount of time. The level of engineering behind that is mind-boggling.
It's a really good point.
I don't know how it's doing it. It's such a throwaway line, and it asks so many questions that I don't think is answerable. Like, it would make more sense to have individual suns above every person that does individual tanning. How is it coming from one point in the sky and hitting... What if you're hugging somebody? What if you're like, you're holding hands? What? I don't know how this would work.
You feel better?
Not really, because I have no answers. It's one of those places, one of those times where I was hoping the live chat might say, Ian, no, this is clearly how it happens. But everyone agrees with me. This makes no sense. Zach Ransom, I know this is the joke, but if you're going undercover, you have to change more than just the J. You can't just be Zach. It's a bad undercover name, Danae.
But is it good humor?
Yeah. So maybe it gets a pass for being good humor.
Maybe every episode the writers are like, we have to have at least two jokes that a 7-year-old can understand.
Yeah, exactly. Why is Boimler so perplexed by genitals being in a different place? He's quite outraged by it. He's like, why? Like, the alien is like, you're grabbing onto my genitals. He's like, why are they on your back? And the alien quite rightly says, where else would they be? Totally normal to him. It's just like, Boimler's even made a reference to an alien in Star Trek VI that has their genitals on their kneecaps. He knows this is a thing. Why would he be surprised by
He was very defensive and shouldn't have been. And it was pretty insulting.
Yeah. Pretty insulting about where you keep your genitals. This was quite a big one for me. Boimler mentions Galaxy's Child, which is the name of the episode. So he's like, is this a Galaxy's Child situation? And I'm like, nowhere in the episode do they call the alien Galaxy's Child.
Mm.
It doesn't come up. And I'm like, okay, fine. I guess. Yeah,
that's interesting because that breaks it. Like,
mm-hmm.
You're using an episode title to describe a log in someone else's ship.
And when they've done this before, when Ransom has mentioned TOS and Freeman is like, huh? TOS? And he's like, yeah, you know, those old scientists.
That's what right. I call there Kirk, was like a Spock reason for it.
There's a reason for it. This is just naming the episode title, which I guess maybe in the log they call it Galaxy's Child, but it feels like a weird thing to call the alien. So, and there's no like explanation for why he mentions the episode title. So it did feel a little bit jarring to me.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm. I like that scene.
Jennifer says, do you think you can trust me one last time? Just tell me the fucking plan. Like, this happens so much in like TV and movies. Instead of like explaining the fucking plan, put your hand out, trust me. Having this conversation about trust is going to take way longer than you just telling me what your batshit plan is, and then I'll trust you.
Yeah, it happens so much in the content, which is that they don't want to spend the time explaining what they're about to do. But in real life, if there was an emergency in front of me, and I guess there are situations where I would say, I've got a plan, just go with me because everything's happening so fucking fast, I can't explain anything. But usually there's a walk and talk situation that you can at least walk and talk at the same time.
Yeah. Just give me, I'm going to throw us in there so that Talin can use the vibe tubes. Yeah, I'm in. Let's go.
My plan involves tubes. Come with me.
It's fair. I think Mariner would have been down for that.
Do you want to vibe with some tubes? Come with me. Yeah, she'd be like, hell yeah. I remember why I liked you.
I like vibing with your tubes, baby. My last one was, how did she count the sides so quickly in such an urgent situation? She counted to 20 very quickly, which includes counting the backside that she couldn't see. However, sin removal for the joke.
It's so funny.
It's so good. It's an icosahedron. Amazing. I love it. Well, that's all of the sins that I had. Next week, the episode title is called Guess. Go on. I love you. I love you getting to guess this.
Kookaburra
sits in the old
malice.
Mm-hmm.
Amidst pentacles.
It's very close, actually.
Really?
The episode title is weird. A Farewell to Farms.
Ha! Yeah, I was close.
Yeah, super close.
Yeah. Totally close. A Farewell to
Farms. What happens next week, Ambassador?
Something about farms. Okay. Oh my God, we're going to the whale farm.
We're going to milk some whales.
We're going to the whale farm. They are the reason for the rift.
Mm-hmm.
And this admiral is going to save the universe with his whale knowledge.
Love it. What a redemptive arc for this character that we just met at the end of this episode.
We really hate that he decided to turn off the sun for his face and do some sunburning on purpose.
That's also a callback to an episode of Deep Space Nine, which I almost don't want to talk about because Worf and Jadzia go to Risa. And Worf decides to fuck with the environmental systems on the entire planet and basically creates a monsoon on this planet that is regulated to be a tropical paradise. And he makes it rain.
Was he bored?
His reason was anger that Jadzia was having so much fun is the crux of it. Like, there's more to it. It's not a great Worf episode.
What?
Yeah, he gets a bit pissy. And
he's mad that his wife is having fun.
I don't think they're married yet, but yes.
He's mad that his girlfriend is having fun, so he wants to go fuck with the weather and ends up causing
everyone's vacation on the entire planet. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not a great,
you know,
warp
we all have those moments in our history where we're like, yeah, that wasn't my best shining moment. Yeah, sorry about that.
Wasn't good for me. Yeah.
Did they blame him having some sort of like, it was in his moody cycle? Because one of the things I love about the Klingons is that they seem to have like very familiar cycle problem. Like they're in this phase or something. And so everything is more intense. And I'm like, I get that. Yeah. I fucking get that.
Nope. This was just Worf being Worf.
Right.
No excuse like that at all, I'm afraid. Yep. So yeah, my prediction is that this is going to be about a move from an agrarian society rapidly into a industrial society and a prime directive thing where there is going to be some rapid progress that the Cerritos is like, do we interfere with this or do we let them go? Or do we let them?
There's
let them
never go? A question with a Cerrito. Yeah. They just jump in
they
there
just
and just
get
do
involved.
Shit.
That's what I think it is. And I think we're going to see the return of Boimler's farming outfit.
Oh, because that's what we need. We all need that.
We do. We need to go back to, what is his farm?
And peanut
is it a
hamper.
Is it a date farm that he has?
I don't know, but we need to have Peanut
Raisin
Hamper
farm.
Join
we do.
As like the co-farmer.
Yeah. That would mean Peanut Hamper would have to break out of prison, I think. I think they're still in prison.
She can do it.
Yeah. Quick prediction from the live show that I really, really liked is that the dog is on the farm.
Oh, yay.
That's where they've been sent. So maybe this is a return of the farm.
Oh, that's funny because, yeah, because that's what parents sometimes will tell the kiddos is that the dog went to the farm.
Well, that's the joke of the episode.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
That's
I love
a
it.
Joke.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening to RKS, everyone. Let us know what you thought about the show and the episode. Send us an email to captainspod@cinemasins.com. Once upon a time, we might do a mailbag episode. We have lots of thoughts for different types of episodes we're going to do. Join our lovely Discord as well. We have lovely people talking Trek. I started doing like a little Star Trek book club thing where I started telling people about the Star Trek book that I've been reading from the 90s that no one else has read. So if you want to hear me ramble about Star Trek books or just talk to other Star Trek, it's discord.gg/cinemasins. And until next time, I'm Captain Ian and I am master of the vibe tubes.
But to quote Mariner, you might be master of the vibe tubes, but I'm going to find the fuck out.
Despite the increase in cheering, your presence is a comfort. Live long and podspur.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Hi!
Are you recording?
I'm recording!
Damn it!
I'm always recording. Always recording. Go on. I'm not one.
Don't judge.
Yep.
Don't judge.
No. I wasn't going to mention it.
You can't not.
No, I wasn't going to.
It's the entirety of the upper part of my head.
But you text me saying, hey, make sure you're recording.
Don't. Just don't.
What? Yeah. Make sure you're recording so that you can get the reaction to your hair. So you did kind of preload me to comment upon your hair.
Yes. No, I just wanted to make sure that when you said I had a bird's nest on my head, that it was recorded, but then you didn't actually want it.
Well, no, because I was ready.
Then just ignore it. Now it's awkward.
Why would
I
comment
on
your...
Now it's awkward because it makes it seem now like I want you to comment on it. You don't have to.
She was asking for it, guys.
Oh.
Nope. It does look accidentally deliberate.
Yeah. So... what happened, you see, was I made this messy bun atop my head and then I had this adorable clip in it.
You got the messy part right.
Yeah. That's what they're designed to look a bit chaotic. I call it a mom bun now. But anyway, then I realized I have to wear headphones.
So I sat down
and it was so high. I couldn't even put my headphones on because the cans for my ears were like up on my temples.
Yeah, that's not conducive.
So then I had to take the clip out, which is when it turned into this.
So was it a clean removal of the clip or was there a fight and that's created the tumbleweed on your scalp?
There was it was like you remove it and then the headphones just sort of sunk down.
And
then everything
forward.
Everything just, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a little not what I was expecting.
I think you should go with it and see if anybody is brave enough to comment.
No
and just
way.
Call them out on stream. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
We'd call them out for being a dick.
We'd be purposefully fishing for
it. Yes. We would be, it would be entrapment. Yeah.
they would immediately comment.
Although, if you're trapping a dick, then wait. No.
Wait.
One of the workarounds that I've come up with is, and this is tricky, but based on the episode title, and I might read the synopsis as well, is work out what the potential references are and pull up pictures of the references, which is what I've done this week.
Pictures of the references.
Yeah, I know one of the things this episode is referencing. So I've pulled up some of those images from the original episode. Yeah. And then what's incredible is that I get to look God level when I pull up an image of a reference and they're like, how did you know?
But what if you're wrong?
Then I never use the image and nobody knows. That's the fucking beauty. This is how con artists work. You don't talk about the predictions that never came true. You focus on the predictions that are in a million that you got right.
This is how tarot works.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Speaking of the cat.
Mm-hmm.
So he leaves for Halloween. I start thinking about horror stories of cats and Halloween, which of course are usually related to black cats. So I'm like, I'm fine. It's fine. He's fine. I look over partway through the chaos of all the children coming to the neighborhood, and my neighbors have dressed up as different Disney characters. So the mom is Maleficent. The daughter is one of the princesses. The younger daughter has gone a totally different direction, and she and her friends are wearing like all these different animal tails and face and masks that look like cats and like tuxedos that they're doing something adorable and amazing, and I love it. I think they're like, let's say 13, 14, something like that. And one of them is holding Thunderstorm. And I point this out to my family. I was like, well, so Thunderstorm is back with his actual owners right now. And he's just like a little baby in her arms, just, and she's snuggling him, and she's just like a cat, and she's holding her cat. And I was like, oh, that's so nice. Because I asked them, like, do you still see this cat? And she says, yeah, he comes over like in the morning every once in, like, so I think he'll go over in the morning and then he comes over. I don't know. Anyway.
Get fed twice. Yeah.
Probably. So then I hear the teenager say, Mom, oh no, we missed his birthday. And I was like, oh my God, I've stolen their cat.
You really have.
And they forgot about him.
Yeah.
And now he's back, at least for this moment.
Just for a cuddle, yeah.
And they're like, oh, we forgot about you. And I said, that's because he's at my house.
He's at my place. Every day is his birthday at my house.
And I don't know if I should feel bad about it. Because even the mom was like, he is basically your cat now.
Yeah, you've been very transparent.
I'm not sure. I could do more, maybe, to be more transparent.
No, just let the cat be where it wants to be. I've seen a picture of what happens when you do the grooming on the dog.
Shut up. That was an extreme situation. I was using a ball trimmer too.
Yeah, you were. I'm sure you've shown that picture on the Morning DNA.
I'm sure I have. That was an extreme circumstance. That was, the dogs needed to go to the groomers. Pandemic just kicked off. Nobody was going anywhere. The mats are all over. But the poor dog, miserableness. I don't have a shaver. And this is before you could like have your groceries delivered like it was a normal thing. And I didn't know what to do, but I did have the Manscaped Lawnmower 2.0 that had been sent to us as part of a promotional item so that we could potentially have an ad and like an ad relationship. And so they had sent this in, and it's like, this company is like, you'll get the closest shave to your balls that you've ever gotten. And I was thinking, and it's not going to hurt you in your sensitive foldy bits. And so I was like, okay, that sounds like it would be a safe thing to do with a puppy. And it was, there was no nicking, there was no bleeding, there was no cutting, but it was the closest shave to skin. I just took all the fur off of the dog. And man, once you start on that path, there's no coming back.
Unless you turn him into a lion, that's it.
Uh-huh. Why are you yawning already? It's so early.
Me? I haven't yawned. Yeah. I didn't just yawn.
Did you guys have a different experience than I just did?
I think I just exhaled a lot, right?
Was that not a yawn?
I don't think so.
God, I want to go back and watch our own show.
Yeah, let's just go into Twitch or YouTube and just take a minute, pull up the stream inside this stream, go back in time and
12 seconds.
Yeah.
I thought you just went, like you're doing it right now.
What are you talking about?
That was on purpose.
Yeah, that was a deliberate one.
That was on purpose, you jerk.
Streamception.
Keith.
That was the most adorable sneeze in the world.
Fun little backstory. And do you like when you sneeze, do you sneeze purposefully?
I have no choice how I sneeze. My sneeze comes out as if Oppenheimer created it. That's the only way I can sneeze. That's it.
So my mother has that same sneeze you're talking about. It's like a, I'm gonna get the microphone for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like this. And it comes in at least three, often more.
Yeah, it's a 9 on the Richter scale.
So all growing up, this was what I... There was literally a time when my brother and I were walking around in the store together and we had like, he and I were together and like mom was doing her own thing and the rule was, you know, just don't go too far.
Yeah.
So we could hear her sneezing across the entire store.
Yeah.
And we just stop what we're doing, look at each other and go, well, I guess we know where mom, we don't need a Marco Polo. We know where mom is.
Yeah.
Because I was terrified that I would have that same sneeze. I worked my entire youth to be able to sneeze completely silent. And so I choose the sound I make. So the adorable sneeze was a choice I made, but it is pretty cute. It sounds like a little mouse. I heard it in a movie once. I was like, I want to sneeze like that. So then that's what I did. But I don't know what my sneeze is because I was paralyzed by fear.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that is actually controllable. Like, Maybe you just don't have the big sneeze gene. Because I think if I tried to do that, it would explode my eyeballs out of my skull.
Right, but the fear of that was overridden by the fear of having a loud sneeze.
Yeah, and that's
so
what I want to know.
So I just experimented with it and then discovered I can kind of have more control.
Can everyone do that?
Or I
can
don't
some
know.
People not do it no matter what? Captain's Pod, Stardate 17.11.14.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always...